Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's good. I like it when you're good.
I recently found out that Neil Young had like a string of like electronic records.
Trance.
Okay, it was trance because I was really curious about it, and when I went for my walk, I wanted to listen to it like out of curiosity. But that guy has so many albums. He releases like an album a year, it looks
like. Oh, he's been doing this for many, many decades.
Yeah, so, and I didn't know like the name of the electronics album. So I went by the cover art and
I saw the red car.
Like, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I saw that and I was like, all right, well, this is looks like it'd be an electronic music record and it's in the 80s, so I'll try my luck with this one. Yeah, so I listened to a song called like Computer Guy.
Guy and like, what is it, like Search and Hold or something that's like really, it's all vocoder, like crazy. It's just so weird. Because Neil Young, I've always just pictured as the guy who always looked 90, and he just, you know, had his little acoustic guitar and like, oh, protest songs, yeah. And, you know, the straw hat or something, you know.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, here's this one, like, you see footage of it. What were we watching? Oh, we were watching
David Geffen.
Yeah, Inventing David Geffen, and they showed a couple clips of him, and like, he even dressed super weird in like the videos and stuff for this.
Yeah, I was really surprised because, yeah, I only knew him as like the, you know, old man, take a look at my, like that type of Neil Young. I didn't know that he had this other life as like an electronic musician and like a rockabilly singer guy.
Yeah, the Shocking Pinks was his band with that. Yeah,
I had no idea. So that was really it was really walk hard of him to have these different eras.
Yeah, you can immediately tell which one you're looking at. But I was looking that up recently too because we watched that Geffen thing, and I was like, I kind of want to hear this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to find the music video because like they show footage of him. It's just super weird. It's him like being like really robotic and doing this like electronic voice and stuff. And I couldn't find the music video for it. I think the song was Search and Hold, but I was like, maybe did this get... Neil Young is very up on modern internet and, you know, like he's weirdly up to date on technology. So it wouldn't surprise me if he was one of those acts that's like really good at like getting stuff pulled down from YouTube and stuff. So I was looking like the Internet Archive. I was trying to see like, was this part of a concert film? And I cannot find that video anywhere that we saw clips for in the David Geffen documentary. But in
that
the search,
so weird.
I know it's crazy because like I've seen that footage not just in the Geffen thing, I've seen it elsewhere, and I've always wanted to see that full video because it looks so weird. The only thing I could find, and I don't think it was that, but it was something new, was on the Internet Archive. It's almost like lost media. I don't think this is on DVD or Blu-ray or anything, but it was a movie called Human Highway that he made with like Devo. And it's supposed to be like one of the worst movies of all time. It's got all these like kind of music, like it'll have like this Devo song made for the movie with like, but it's got like a plot. It's like a comedy. Neil Young is in it as like a mechanic or something.
Wow.
And I just kind of skipped around the timeline a few times and it looks fucking bonkers.
Wow.
But the only place I could find it was on the Internet Archive. I think it's like been scrubbed from history.
That's crazy. I'd be curious about that movie.
I'll show you the link, the Internet Archive one. Yeah. Anyone at home that's curious, just look up Human Highway on the Internet Archive. And the whole thing is there just to like preserve it since it's like doesn't exist elsewhere. It looks really, really weird.
That's weird. Yeah. I mean, I could see Devo and Neil Young together. I mean, like Neil Young with his protest songs and Devo. Like, wasn't Devo like made the people in those bands were somehow connected to the Ohio shooting of the
Kent State?
Yeah.
Devo was Devo, I mean, well, Neil Young Devolution. Did the song
"For Dead in Ohio."
Right, right, yeah. And then wasn't I? I could be mistaken, but I think Devo is like they formed to kind of create music that was like the Devolution or whatever.
Oh,
a response to all the stuff going on.
I wasn't aware of any of their like prior to Devo stuff. Mm-hmm. All I really know is like Mark Mothersbaugh, who I think is like the leader of Devo. He went on
the
to
leader.
Do. The leader, yeah. Well, I don't know, like if like a band like that that's so heavily electronic, I don't know if he's like the front man or like I think he was like, I don't know shit about it, but he did the music for Rugrats.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And obviously the music for Rugrats isn't like vocal stuff, so I would assume he's more kind of like the producer or, I don't know, with more electronic stuff, what you call that figure. Is it producer? The one who's like making the basic beats?
Musician. I mean, yeah, it's even though it's synthetic music instruments, it still requires the ability to compose and stuff like that.
So I don't know if composer maybe is the word I'm looking for. But I think, Mark Mothersbaugh was maybe that like leader in that, right? And he went on to do like a bunch of like film stuff. I think he might have done some video game work too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, if he did the music for the Rugrats, I never really watched the Rugrats, but but I did have this Rugrats computer game that I would only play at my grandma's house when she was watching me, and it would run on her little Dell computer that she had. And it was like a bunch of like kind of like a collection of mini games, but I remember the one game was like a type game. You had to like type the word accurately and quickly. And that was one of our dogs just hacked up a fur ball. One of the games was Reptar, like burning up a city, like, you know, the big dinosaur.
Yeah, Reptar. Of course.
And there was like this song that I remember, and I can remember it very clearly because the it had like female vocal, and the woman was like talking about how he acts so mad, but really he's just sad.
Oh, Reptar,
and I just,
sad?
Yeah, I distinctly remember that as a kid, yeah. Maybe that was that guy.
I wonder if that's just for the game or if that was something from the show.
It was probably just for the game. It wasn't that good of a song.
Yeah. So you never really saw the show much?
Of Rugrats?
Yeah.
You know, it's... I was into other shows of that era. I could never like super get into Rugrats, but it's not that I didn't like see episodes. I did see episodes. I just, there was something about it that I didn't like as a kid.
The animation's weird. Like the character designs are kind of odd and lumpy.
Yeah. Maybe it was just like, cause they were babies, you know, and I was just like, I don't want to watch this baby show.
Yeah. I watched it and I remember enjoying it, but like to me, like Nicktoons, I think they all debuted at the same time. It was Doug, then Rugrats,
love
then Ren
Doug.
And Stimpy. And that's the thing is like, Doug, great start to my Nicktoons Sunday. Mm-hmm. Rugrats, I'll stick around. I'll enjoy some stuff. So I've seen a lot of Rugrats. Mm-hmm. But then Ren and Stimpy was the real show stealer for me. So, like, yeah, Sunday morning Nicktoons. Eventually, they added Ah, Real Monsters after Ren and Stimpy.
Wow.
And I liked Ah, Real Monsters. But again, it was all Ren and Stimpy number one for me.
You said this was Sunday afternoon?
Sunday Nicktoons.
Sounds great.
Oh, it was awesome. So Saturday night, you had SNICK, uh-huh. which was Saturday Night Nick, and that was Clarissa Explains It All, Roundhouse. I think they would air Ren and Stimpy then, too, since that appealed to, like, you know, older kids, I guess. And then Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Wow.
So they would get spooky at the end of Saturday night. Then you wake up, and you watch Nicktoons in the morning.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, I missed out on all of that kind of stuff. We didn't get cable until we were a little bit older. But I would have cable when I was at my grandma's house. So because my parents, you know, would watch us during the weekend, you know, because they weren't working or whatever. You know, I would be at my childhood home when it was the weekend time. So I didn't get to see any of that stuff. But I do remember TGIF on ABC.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I remember that. That was a whole ritual for us. That was so much fun. It was Sabrina the Teenage Witch. It was Boy Meets World.
Right.
And it culminated in 2020, which I would watch with my mom. And that probably is the reason for my love of true crime today. But
that must have been a later era, because I think I started watching TGIF where it was Family Matters, and then it was Step by Step. Mm-hmm. And then I can't remember what came after that. But I remember Sabrina happened later, because she was Clarissa first. Mm-hmm. And I remember that was like my era of Nickelodeon. And then I never really saw Sabrina that much.
Yeah, I loved Sabrina. I wanted magic powers so bad. I still do.
Yeah?
I really want them.
Well, you know, you work hard at anything you want, and you can make that happen.
If there's any magic genies listening to this, please come visit me.
Yeah, you can be a guest.
I'd be a devoted subject.
You have to prove magic ability, and then we can bring you on as a guest. But actually, speaking of that era, that actually kind of segues perfectly into what we watch here, because we're talking kind of like 93-ish television there. 1993, they made movies back. You just directly burped. I can't give you shit for that. I do it all the time on stream. I'm just actively farting and burping all the time. This is around that same era. I remember seeing a ton of ads for The Fugitive, the 1993 film, which we watched. And what did we watch this on? Was this on HBO Max?
Prime.
Prime. This is on Amazon Prime. That's right. Yes, the Harrison Ford one, which they're
no been... HBO Max. It was on HBO Max.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, wait, it was HBO Max.
It was HBO Max. Yeah,
oh, okay,
I was just like, wait a second. Now I'm thinking about the interface, and yeah, it was HBO for sure.
Okay.
Sorry that I said with such confidence.
That's no problem.
Something that was blatantly incorrect.
You know what? I bet you could rent it on Prime Video if you wanted to.
I'm
but
sure
that'd
you
be
could.
Silly if you had HBO Max.
But if you didn't have HBO Max, it wouldn't be so silly. Now, would
that's true. However you choose to watch it, whether it was 1993 in a theater or on HBO Max or Amazon Prime now, we watched this one that there's many permutations here. So there's a 1963 TV series.
Oh, okay.
That ran for 4 seasons. And it's the same characters. It's Richard Kimball. It's the One-Armed Man.
Is it the same story?
Well, if it was broken into 120 episodes.
Wow.
But I don't think it's beat by beat. I think the characters are roughly the same. But yeah, it was 4 30-episode seasons. It's crazy back then with TV. Like, every, like, drama and comedy and stuff is just, like, 20, 30 episodes. It's just nuts now.
It's too much.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so that was a big thing, and this was, I wouldn't really call it a remake, but it is the same character, so it's definitely not just a, like, spiritual thing or whatever. But there was also U.S. Marshals, which was the sequel later in the 90s, mm-hmm. starring Tommy Lee Jones as the same character, with no Harrison Ford, which probably a good call, because I think it would be a bit of a stretch to have the same character be wrongfully... Yeah.
He was convicted of someone else's murder wrongfully yeah. the yeah. second time, yeah.
That would be a stretch. So they went with Wesley Snipes for the second one, and I remember that was not nearly as well-regarded. But a lot of the same U.S. Marshals and everything. The guy whose ear gets messed up, Joe Pantoliano mm-hmm. is in it, Tommy Lee Jones plays the same character, and it's a very similar setup where it's like... wrongfully accused Wesley Snipes, Tommy Lee Jones.
It worked the first time. Why not do the same thing with the same characters a second time?
Yep, and make it a bit worse, and everyone forgot about it. So,
what is a U.S. Marshal? I always thought they were people that were like undercover in planes.
That too, like they do that. I know that those are air marshals, I think.
Oh.
But I think it's all like federal. I could be completely wrong about this, but I think it's they work for the federal government, and that's okay. why they can show up and like supersede local police, as you see in this movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you always see that in action movies where it's like, oh, okay, get out of here. This is FBI. You know, they flash the badge, the guys in the suits, and it's like, oh, this is our thing now. Like Die Hard does a whole thing about yeah. that. I think that's what this was like. A U.S. Marshal showing up and being like, hey, you small town hicks, I'm taking over.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah, what I liked about this movie, I love when movies do this. It just doesn't dilly-dally at all. It just starts, like, doesn't even start. Like, during the credits is when the wife is getting murdered. You
yeah.
see, like, the opening credits is when the catalyst for the entire movie happens.
Yeah, they don't waste a lot of time. Like, we see what happened. We're like, oh, they were going to this charity dinner. And, like, they establish everything pretty quickly. Like, successful doctor, mm-hmm. Wealthy friends, wife murdered. Like, you know, let's meet a few characters that are going to be important later mm-hmm. on. And then it's just, like, right away, like, they don't do a bunch of time in the court of him getting like arrested or you know tried or anything
right.
I still think like the credits are going on and he's like in jail basically
yeah it gets all that stuff out of the way so that the meat of the movie is just focusing on him being a fugitive and trying to escape the authorities
yeah
but unlike most fugitives his goal is not just to avoid getting caught but he wants to solve his wife's murder while he's also trying to evade the police.
Well, it's just like OJ when OJ got acquitted and spent the rest of his life trying to find the real killer.
Oh, yeah, because, yeah, I'm sure he stayed up a lot of nights wondering who killed his wife that he would repeatedly beat and was, yeah, a domestic abuser beforehand. Yeah,
who could have known? He's going around the woods in California with a magnifying glass trying to find some bloody footprints or something right now, I'm sure. Yeah, fuck OJ. No, you're right. I think both of these things are difficult, solving a murder mm-hmm. and also escaping federal custody.
Yeah, and so he the okay. I like I alluded to earlier. I love true crime, and there's pretty much this rule: like 90% of the time, if a spouse is murdered and they have a husband or they have a wife, chances are that their partner is responsible for their murder. That's like most of the time. That's the case.
I should have trusted your judgment on that because I've heard you say that all the time, but I do remember there was one time I was watching the news in the morning before work back in New York City,
yeah.
and there was some horrible thing where
it was
it's like,
Colorado, yeah, that guy killed his family.
Yeah, they made a document. We watched the documentary
yeah,
on something.
Yeah,
there's like American murder or something
like that.
But yeah, this wife and these two daughters mm-hmm. got killed and like shoved in like an oil barrel or something. It was some awful, awful thing. And I just remember seeing the dad get interviewed, and I remember he just seemed so... dazed and just like his whole world had been rocked. I remember him just being like, I just want to find them. I just want to find them safe. And I remember thinking like, oh man, what a nightmare he must be going through. And I told you about this. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I think there's some like unsolved murder thing going on. And then I said that they interviewed the husband and you were like, oh, it was him.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, I don't know. He seemed like rocked. He seemed really, and you're like, no, it was him. It's always the husband.
Yeah.
And sure enough, like
the
2 days later,
day,
it's
yeah.
like, it was him.
Yeah. It's usually him. So you can't necessarily blame the local authorities for thinking it's Harrison Ford. Who plays Richard Kimball in this movie, because Harrison Ford's defense is, no, it wasn't him. It was a one-armed man. Some real Zanny the Nanny kind of
what,
alibi.
Zanny the Nanny?
Zanny the Nanny? You remember, this woman, she killed her kid, Casey Anthony, I think?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Was it Lacey or Casey Anthony?
I think Casey Anthony. Lacey Peterson was a different
Lacey
one.
Lacey Peterson, right.
Yeah,
I think Casey Anthony. She was found not guilty. So she was found not guilty, but it's widely thought that she was responsible for the murder of her daughter. But she said that like her, she was last, more or less that the baby was last seen with her nanny, who was Zanny the nanny. That's what she said her nanny's name was, Zanny the nanny.
Did they find evidence of a nanny named Zanny?
No.
That she even exists? No, no one found this?
No, I don't think so. If I remember correctly, there never was a Zanny the nanny.
That didn't raise eyebrows?
Oh, it raised a lot of eyebrows, yeah. It was just one of those things. I guess she had really good lawyers, and like at the end of the day, it's you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. And if there's any doubt, then if there is any doubt, you shouldn't be, you know, if you're in the jury, you shouldn't be voting guilty if there is doubt, you know.
I mean, I think, you know, in just the documentaries and stuff we've seen between like Johnny Cochran and OJ and Fred Durst. Robert Durst. We did just watch the Woodstock 99 one, so I also was thinking about Fred Durst, but Robert Durst, yeah, right? And he got off on that first trial, right?
Yeah, yeah. He pleaded self-defense, even though he butchered the body afterwards.
Yeah, I remember the attorney being like, listen, we're not here trying him on mutilation charges. He admits he chopped up that body into itty bits, but hey, we're here. That's not murder. Well, it doesn't look good. It doesn't help the not murder argument.
Yeah, you have to have a certain state of mind to be able to chop up a body.
Yeah. I think his trial is going on right now, actually. And
God, remember,
so weird. Yes.
Kill them all. Who would do that? Like, wait, like all you have to do is not just admit to yourself out loud that you did something while you have a recorder on, while you're wearing a recorder.
Well, it's weird. I was reading about that since I heard he was in trial again, and they showed, they revealed in the trial the order of what he was actually saying in the bathroom, what was originally on the tape. And for the jinx, they did move some stuff around.
Interesting.
So in the movie, you hear him say, oh, what did he do? And kill them all, of course. But that was, he did say both of those things, but like early on, he's like, he was just kind of rambling. Oh, what did I do? I don't know. He did this. You know, what am I supposed to do? The burping. What's going on? Oh, killed them all, of course. That's what they say I did. You know, like it was.
So the magic kind of editing, yeah.
It was, yeah, but like I think the argument was that, like, well, it doesn't really change. Like he's, I don't know, he's still obviously guilty. It just made it sound more dramatic as like, oh, what did they do? Killed them all, of course. You know, like it sounds worse that way.
Yeah.
But he definitely killed those people.
Yeah, it's it's weird. Like, I don't know if you've, I don't think you've, I've never heard you talk to yourself at all. Growing up, my dad would always talk to himself when he was angry about something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he would like have full-on conversations with himself.
What does that sound like?
It's like, oh, fucking shit, leaving the toilet bowl up and don't just clean, leave the vacuum everywhere. And yeah, just like under his breath, yeah, having like full-on conversations.
Oh, no, I don't think I do that. Yeah. I don't think you do either.
I'll say like, oh, fuck, or something to myself if I emote. Yeah, if I'm.
Or if I like see something on my phone or something, it's like, oh, fuck, like some news comes in or an email or like, oh, shit, you know, like, yeah, I think exclamations and full conversations are different.
Yeah, but I've never like been alone and like been like, what was I about to do? Like, I've never said that.
No.
I might have thought it, but yeah. Unless I have an audience, I'm not going to be talking.
Yeah, yeah.
An audience meaning you.
Of course.
Because you're the one that's 90% of the time, if I'm around someone, it's going
to
be you.
I mean, dogs.
Yeah, but that's true. I talk to them a lot.
Yeah.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Anyway, the movie.
Yes. Well, I was remiss at the beginning when I was naming all the different permutations. There was a canceled 2000 TV series that ended without a cliffhanger being resolved. And the main event here, the 2020 Quibi series of The Fugitive. Who could forget The Fugitive broken up into 6-minute episodes?
Wow.
That's
how you tell a story.
Yes, yes. I think we got sidetracked talking about like actual murders and stuff, but I remember like surrounding the actual like release of this. Mm-hmm. This was like a major blockbuster because I was like, you know, 9 when this came out, and I was just watching a lot of TV, and everything was like referencing this. I remember there was a Simpsons where like Milhouse is being pursued, and just like so many movies and stuff. I saw the line like, oh, I didn't do it, I don't care. Like that was in the Simpsons, and Milhouse falls off the thing. Metal Gear Solid 3, there's this thing with like young Ocelot pursuing doing Big Boss, like in a tunnel, and he jumps off the thing. That seems very Fugitive inspired, considering Kojima is such a film dork. And also, I distinctly remember some Jim Carrey character going, "It wasn't me. It was the one-armed man." And I had to look it up, and it's The Mask. He's in full, like, green mask thing, and he did that. So, like, I'd heard so many of these references and everything. For the record, I had seen The Fugitive a long time ago, like high school or college, but like I feel like I saw a million references to it before that, because this was huge. There was a whole Leslie Nielsen parody movie called Wrongfully Accused that was just like straight up The Fugitive.
Wow.
Which Ben Hansen and I watched back when I lived in Minnesota, and this one gag just fucking killed us, because it does the train thing from the beginning where Leslie Nielsen, it's the same thing, Leslie Nielsen's looking for like a one-armed man, you know, same type of thing, dives off a train, and there is that scene in The Fugitive where Harrison Ford is like running straight as the train is derailed and coming after him, and you think, like, well, just go to the right. You know, it's just going to keep going straight. But in Wrongfully Accused, Leslie Nielsen's like running through the woods with the train right behind him, and he's like zigzagging and stuff, and then he like hides behind a rock, and it's really quiet. And you see Leslie Nielsen like poke his head out, and then from the other side you see the train poke out, like it's peeking around a rock, this giant train. That's a really good gag. It's just like hiding.
That is funny.
Yeah, yeah. So that's just to say that this movie, like, I don't think it gets talked about all the time now, but like it definitely was like a big fucking deal when it came out. Do you, I mean, like, you were fucking toddler at this point,
it would have barely existed when this movie came out if it was in 93, but it's one of those movies that I've still been aware of, and you know, I've heard of it. Wasn't like I went into this never hearing the title before, but yeah, I've always been excited. It was when I saw it was on HBO, it's been one of those ones I really wanted to watch with you for Panning Stream. And I'm excited to have finally done it, because it was a fantastic movie. I mean, it the pacing is so good, it never lets up, it's always super tense. Like, there was never a point in the movie where it's dropping off, because you at a certain point, So Harrison Ford plays Richard Kimball. He's a doctor. He's really smart. He's like not just any old doctor. He's like an exceptional doctor that fixes other doctors' mistakes, as we see in the movie.
I like when the other doctor is telling the marshals that, like, oh, no, he's extremely smart. And they're like, oh, smarter than you? And he's like, yes. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, it's not just that he's, you know, being lucky or using brute strength to overcome his enemies. He's outsmarting them at every turn.
This isn't an action movie in that there is a lot of action going on, but he's not Rambo. He's not going around shooting people or like getting in a bunch of fist fights. Like, there's some physicality, but it's mostly outwitting them.
Yeah, he's not like an amazing sharpshooter for some reason or anything.
It's not like Air Force One where he's the president that's also sweet at ass kicking.
Yeah. And he uses the fact that he's a doctor to his advantage in a lot of ways. Like, when he, so as soon as the train crashes and the inmates escape, he makes his escape and he's wounded. So he sneaks into a hospital to treat his wounds, because he's a doctor and he knows how to treat his wounds. But not only does he know how to treat his wounds because he's a doctor, but he also knows how to act being a doctor. So he's able to like social engineer his way into like sneaking around openly.
It's like a hitman level.
Yeah. It's like one of those things where it's like, if you're running away, people are going to be really suspicious of you. But if you're he's just walking around with a lab coat on, eating a sandwich and like, you know, not a care in the world, like a police officer stops him, is like, hey, have you seen this man? Shows him a picture of himself.
It's like, oh, 6'1", brown hair, you know, something.
Yeah, and he's like, no, I haven't seen him. But yeah, it's
no, just... he goes, he's even more clever than that. He goes like, he's like, oh, every time I look in the mirror, except for the beard part.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah,
he,
right.
He has like kind of a clever, like confident answer to that.
Yeah,
you know?
Like just hiding in plain sight kind of thing. It's just really, really cool. I haven't seen an action movie that's, like you said, it's not like super duper action packed with like these crazy shootouts or anything like that, but it's so smart.
Yeah.
Like, the protagonist is so smart.
Well, and I think it is a movie that, like, you know, it's written well, it's directed well, it's all very well made, but, like, I think the leads in this movie are what really, really carry it. I think Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones are perfect for these roles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Ford, I was thinking about this. This might have been, in my mind, I kind of see this as one of Ford's last big movies where he's, like, in his prime leading man, you know, stuff. Because, like, all the original trilogy Star Wars stuff is behind him. Mm-hmm. All the good Indiana Joneses are behind him.
Blade Runner.
Blade Runner, you know, American
what
Graffiti.
What about Con Air? Isn't that off?
He's not in Con Air. And it was after.
But Harrison Ford isn't in...
Nope.
No, not Con Air. I'm sorry. Air Force One.
That's the thing. Air Force One was 97. Did we watch it together at some point?
Yes.
Okay. I remember it didn't age that well.
No, it wasn't that great.
I wrote down some of the... Yeah, I remember all the vice president stuff on the ground with, like, Glenn Close wasn't great. There were some that came out afterwards. Clear and Present Danger, Force Awakens, Blade Runner 2049. But I look at, like, Force Awakens and Blade Runner 2049. It's like, it's great that he's in it. I mean, but, like, it is just kind of a, like, oh, wow, we got Harrison Ford back to play that role again. You know, it's like... I wouldn't consider that, like, I don't want to call it a gimmick when they do that, but it's just like, you know, he's not, well, and he's got a pretty big moment in Force Awakens for sure, but it's not his movie. It's not a Harrison Ford movie the way that, like, the original trilogy, he is, like, one of the top people.
Right.
Same with Blade Runner 2049. That's way more, what's his name?
Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling's movie than
Yeah, Deckard's. I agree. Blade Runner, the original, the final cut is probably my favorite movie. But I also was like, kind of like, well, I felt it was a little gimmicky to have Harrison Ford in 2049, because it's like, why not make this universe feel so much bigger? Like, why do you have to tie it so much to the previous one? Like, from the original, you should take the world building, the fact that there's all these replicants and stuff, and obviously the aesthetic. But there's no reason to include Harrison Ford. And also, it doesn't really make sense because, you know, if you... I mean, I feel like the final cut makes pretty explicit that he's a replicant.
Yeah.
So why would he be physically aged? You know what I mean?
I mean, the honest answer is just like, it's going to sell a lot more tickets if you got the guy from the first one. You know, like that's a selling point. It's like, hey, we got some of the original, we got the main guy from the first one back. Like that's it.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. But I feel like they should have used the similar technology to what they did with, what's her face? The lady, Rachel, the actress who played Rachel.
Right, right.
What's her name? Sean?
Sean Young?
Sean Young. You know, maybe use some of that with Harrison Ford. But I think that's the thing. Like, they always tried to leave it ambiguous. Like, is he a replicant or is he not? Like, I always felt with the unicorn dream, it just made it, like, how could you deny that he's a replicant then? That cancels out, like, half of what the movie is about if he's not. And then by having him as an aged person in 2049, it just kind of is like, well, is he a replicant? I don't know.
Yeah. And then it's like every time they brought Arnold back for Terminator and it's like, wait a minute, why does he look like an old dude now? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, well, he was the dude that they modeled. It's always some like back-ass way.
Yeah.
Although, you know, the cynical part of me does say that it's just to sell tickets. But then I think about it too. And like whenever they bring back one of these big series, like a Star Wars or something, when they show these trailers or whatever, I mean, you at like Comic Cons and stuff, if they show Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker for the first time in decades, it's like that does get a huge, like the hardcore fans, I think, are such fans of those characters and stuff that like I think you probably would turn off a good portion of the fan base if like, oh, you didn't bring Harrison Ford back or you didn't bring Star Wars, you know, Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill. Like it doesn't serve the story in a lot of times, but like I think fans of those like do want to like they're making an Indiana Jones 5 now, and it's like, eh, you know, even though he's old and stuff, it's still like, what are you gonna do? You're gonna have Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying, and that's very true. It, just my personal preference.
Sure,
I just feel like it's kind of like not necessary. But,
it's not. I think it's just that's how these things go. I think.
Yeah. So in The Fugitive, for the bulk of the movie, Dr. Kimball's opposition is the U.S. Marshal. Whose name is Gerard. I can't remember if that's his first
U.S.
name or
Marshal
last.
Sam Gerard.
Sam Gerard. Okay, it's the last name. And that's obviously played by Tommy Lee Jones and his unibrow. And he's an extremely like capable, no-nonsense guy. Doesn't want to deal with any bullshit. Like, doesn't care that... Like, or I'm sure he's heard 1,000 times from criminals that like, oh, I'm innocent, stuff like that. So when he says his famous line, like, oh, I don't care.
He's not the judge.
Yeah, his,
you know?
His job is just to find him. It doesn't matter. But
yeah.
Like 70% way through the movie, he starts to realize, hey, maybe this Kimball guy is actually, you know, telling the truth. Because like everyone he talks to about Kimball is like has nothing but glowing stuff to say about him. And like no one's throwing him under the bus.
And more actual evidence is kind of showing up. Of like, oh, wait, something's weird here.
Yeah, due in no small part to Kimball himself's effort to try to solve his wife's murder. So he's able to sneak into the hospital and like go into this prosthetics lab and go into their computer and deduce like through a series of searches, you know, who are what is the smallest amount of people that fits the specifications he was looking for based on what he knows about this guy's prosthetic
type, what hand it was on, you know, what type of prosthetic
and the type of like joint it was and stuff. So he's able to find a modest list of like five people, which is, you know, you're able to investigate something that size, I guess. And yeah, he just goes about, goes to the first guy. He's in jail. You know, seems kind of likely that this guy with a criminal record might be the one responsible for his wife's murder, but it's not. Then he goes to this other guy, and he recognizes him in photos with Lentz, this pharmaceutical dude.
Yeah.
Who Kimball knew previously.
Yeah, and they kind of worked on like these drug trials mm-hmm. together. And like it's kind of waits until the end to really jump into all that mm-hmm. drug stuff. And then it goes pretty hard on it where it's like, oh, we kind of figure out what the deal is. Like which I'm kind of glad they did this, even if they kind of throw it all on you at once, because it's a less interesting movie if it's just like, oh yeah, there's a one-armed man broke in and killed his wife. You
yeah,
know,
it was but like a hitman situation.
Exactly. So they worked at this like drug trial place for this Provasic mm-hmm. thing, but then like Kimball realized that it was dangerous for it to liver damage or whatever, and then this other doctor, Nichols, who we've met throughout the movie, mm-hmm. was trying to cover it up because he stood to profit off of it. So basically he sent the one-armed man to kill Richard. Mm-hmm. He wasn't there, killed the wife. And then they also, I don't think we see the other doctor that gets like run into like they do a car accident, like yeah, look like an accident
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, he gets killed like while Kimball's in prison, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's also a hit. And yeah, so it becomes clear that Nichols is responsible for his wife's murder. And he happens to be speaking at this like conference about the Prevacic drug. He's like the keynote speaker. And man, can you imagine a more like glorious way to confront someone while they're at this like fancy consortium
yeah.
With like medical professionals as the keynote speaker? And you like step in and you're like, "Excuse me, sir."
No, you just stand there for a while and you see yeah. when Nichols is up there and he sees him and you know internally he's like, "Fuck."
Yeah. Oh God, what is that guy doing here? Yeah, he knows. Oh my God. It's like, so good. I love that scene.
I am a sucker for any, like, I feel like that type of scene has happened in lots of different movies where it's like, oh, the villain is like out it as a bad mm-hmm. guy, well, the most embarrassing possible moment. Mm-hmm. But this is probably one of the better versions that I've seen,
yeah.
where he's just like, you know, he doesn't like charge the stage and tackle him. Right. He just starts walking after him. He's like, oh yeah, so Prevacic. Yeah, I knew about the liver damage. I knew about this. And he's like yeah. speaking loudly in front of all these doctors and potential investors and uh-huh. stuff. And he's like, oh, can we talk afterwards? Can we? I'm not here. And then runs him off. Big confrontation. Basically, Sykes, the one-armed man, and Dr. Nichols get mm-hmm. arrested. And then, yeah, it's kind of like Tommy Lee Jones and Dr. Kimball are in a car just being like, haha, how about that whole trying to kill each other for the last couple weeks or whatever?
Yeah, Gerard is like, I essentially acknowledges that Harrison Ford is innocent and, you know, gives him like a ice pack or something as a show of friendship or
yeah.
something like that.
Sorry about that whole, you know, making you jump off a waterfall thing. Well, it's Tommy Lee Jones throughout. He's almost funny in it. He's so dead serious mm-hmm. most of the time. Like, I love any character where it's like shows up at the scene of whatever and just instantly is the biggest pro. Like, okay, you go over there. Okay, we're going to do some quick math. Okay, yeah. The perimeter's got to be 4 miles. You
like
get over there. You get over there.
Heat.
You know what? I thought about Heat while watching uh-huh. this because it really is that cat and mouse thing of just like, it's these two big leads, De Niro and Pacino or Tommy Lee Jones and Harrison Ford, that are constantly at each other and like, you're kind of not against either one of them.
Right.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially in this case, because, I mean, neither are, like, it's not like Harrison Ford's an anti-hero. Like, he's the most pure hero there is. He's
yeah.
just in a terrible situation. But yeah, it was just a lot of fun. Like, it was never not interesting. I don't feel like it lagged at all. It was really fast paced and just really fun to watch.
Yeah, a few names pop up throughout that, like, oh, Jane Lynch.
I've never
seen her from that far long ago. Julianne Moore is in it, but
yes.
like, it's kind of a minor role. Like, I saw her name in the beginning credits, and I was like, oh, I don't remember her being in this.
This must have been one of her earlier roles, because that was such a minor role.
It is minor, and she seems really young, and I can't really think of her in anything before that.
Mm-hmm.
Always a fan of her. She's great.
Yeah, she is great.
At the end, there's a bunch of like reporters and stuff, obviously, after the big confrontation, and I was like, is that Lester Holt? I didn't know CNN's Lester Holt. I think he's CNN, right? Or is he NBC?
NBC.
NBC, yeah. I was like, I don't remember him ever being in movies before. And I looked it up, and sure enough, it was Lester Holt.
Wow.
Which is weird. One thing I thought was funny was at one point they're showing like a storefront and a bunch of TVs showing like, you know, oh, Richard Kimball on the run. And this is such a dumb little hang up, but the footage they're showing on the news of Richard Kimball is like an actual shot from the movie's film cameras, like it is dramatically in the court. Like, no courtroom camera has ever looked like this with like a nice like zoom in and like perfect quality. It's like, no, it's always like up in the corner, grainy ass courtroom
yeah.
footage, you know?
Yeah.
Also, why were they disguised when they went into that? They went into that one house to catch the second fugitive guy, mm-hmm. and they were dressed like homeless people. going in, but they also like made sure to reveal the U.S. Marshals stuff on their clothes. Like, why were they?
Yeah, they were like only pretending to be homeless until they got within like 50 meters of the house, and then they like revealed their U.S. Marshal thing. It's like, if you want to be stealthy, then stealth all the way up to the house.
Yeah, they get like halfway through the lawn and they're like, all right, enough of this homeless shit. Yeah.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Introducing Batiste sweat-activated and touch-activated dry shampoo. With breakthrough technology that absorbs oil and releases bursts of fragrance whenever you sweat or touch your hair for up to 24 hours, it's the ultimate hair care for girls on the go. Try the newest dry shampoo that's activated by you. Batiste, the future of hair care is here. Buy Batiste dry shampoo online or in store at your nearest retailer.
Tommy Lee won Best Supporting Actor for this. And some other actors who auditioned for the role of Kimball were Alec Baldwin, mm-hmm. Nick Nolte, Kevin Costner, and Michael Douglas.
Okay.
Which I guess they all kind of fit that, like, kind of older-ish leading man type stuff, you know? Yeah. But, like, Ford seems perfect.
I mean, Ford was, like, probably in his 50s when this movie was shot. What do you think?
Probably around 50, I would say.
He's got a six-pack in his 50s. Like, come on, dude.
He's just the coolest dude.
He's so cool.
Like, how can you... I think it's added to the fact that the whole Harrison Ford mystique, like whenever you see footage of him now, I love that he's doesn't give a fuck about Hollywood, mm-hmm. actively disdains it, which is always a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
And then just that super dry, grumpy old man yeah. humor, like the get the fuck out of my house to the David Blaine
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like anytime he's been on Conan, like later in his career, it's always so fucking funny. Like he just seems like the best grumpy uncle
mm-hmm.
possible. You
totally.
Know? Yeah, just the best. Yeah, he hasn't really done that much recently outside of just like kind of the big paydays coming back to play Han Solo.
He's been in so many iconic movies. I mean, he doesn't have to do anything else.
Oh, he doesn't need to prove anything to anyone.
Like,
he's...
Can you think of another actor who's been in as many like even just Star Wars and Blade Runner?
And like, Indy, you know?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Those are three like Apocalypse Now he's in.
Oh, that's right.
Remember? It's a very small role, but he's
that
in it.
That is right, yeah.
If you think about two of the movies I've heard you say might be your favorite movie of all time, both Harrison Ford.
Yeah, yeah. That's
yeah.
awesome.
It's always weird seeing him in a role like in Apocalypse Now where he's just like, he's not the like swaggering hero mm-hmm. type or leading man. He's like, I'm just kind of like an army nerd.
Oh, he was in The Conversation as well. He was he was that guy's assistant.
He was the one, wait. Oh, yeah, he was like, he used a pretty big role in that.
Yeah.
He was the one like helping out Robert Duvall. Robert Duvall also in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Conversation. That's up there with
yeah.
my favorite movies as well.
I guess Harrison Ford is like a real through line in like your favorite stuff.
Yeah. Wow.
That, yeah.
Yeah. Harrison Ford factor.
That's our bold takes here on Painless Dreams. Like, Harrison Ford seems all right.
Yep.
Also, like, keeps like surviving plane crashes and stuff. Like, what the? I remember there was news of him crashing a plane a few years ago, and I was like, oh, no, no, no. And then like a few hours later, it was like, he's okay. So, whew. Seems like a cool dude.
Yep. I approve. Thank you, Harrison Ford, for improving the quality of my life through your movies.
Many, many, many great movies over the years.
I know you're listening, Harrison, and I just want to say
absolutely. That seems like the last thing Harrison Ford would be doing in 2021 is listening. Ooh, somebody reviewed my movies. I got to listen to this. I don't know if he's ever heard a podcast. Maybe some aviation thing. But yeah, it's cool as hell. It's a good one. Holds up. I'd say.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a longer one. It's like, I think, 220 or around there. But, I mean, it keeps the pace, like you said. And
mm-hmm.
It's a real, real good movie still.
Yeah, timeless classic.
Indeed. Well, folks, thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Listening. And a special shout out to our patrons on patreon.com/paintingthestream. Keep it easy. We got a $5 tier. That's the only tier. Gets you early access to episodes.
Wow.
Gets you access to the Discord.
Wow.
Gives you ad-free episodes each and every week.
Wow.
And written for you. By Bonk, specifically for you. It's a Bonk who? Bonk, do we have someone this week?
That's right, Daniel. We sure do.
Excellent.
Did I do that right?
Do we have someone this week? That's right. I mean, everyone got the sentiment.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. Yes, we do.
Well,
their name
is.
Let's
do it again.
Okay, Bonk, do we have someone this week?
We sure do, Daniel.
Oh, excellent. Who is it?
This week, we are honoring our friend Harrison. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
That would have been wrote a Bonk.
Not only a
Harrison
fan,
Ford.
But a patron. Thank you, Mr. Ford.
No, this Bonk is for Matthew. Arguably superior to Harrison Ford in every single way.
My goodness, do you hear that, Matthew?
Matthew, this banku is for you. Quiet and waiting, Matthew stood in the hallway till the time was right.
I like it. That could mean anything. Your mind can wander and think of all the different possibilities for Matthew.
Could be good, could be bad.
Could be sinister. Mm. He could be a fugitive from the law, depending on what he's about to do. Matthew, thank you so much, and thanks to all our patrons. Reminder, if you want to save some money, we do have an annual option, so 15% off.
15%.
If you want to sign up for...
Not a small amount.
Annually, I don't know what this character is. That's right, 15% off if you want to do the annual thing. Patreon.com/paininthestream. That'll be it for this week. Thanks so much to Tom Manda
thank
for the
brother.
Theme song. Bonk, thank you each and every week
well,
for joining
you,
me
sweetheart.
Here. And thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you all next week.
Bye.
Bye.